For years, preachers have drawn Christians towards deeper service for the Lord from the chapel platform, coming to you from Bob Jones University in Greenville, South Carolina. As the call for deeper prayer and discipleship goes forth, God has used many speakers on the chapel platform to share the truth from the Bible at the various preaching services here. Today, our speaker is the president of Northland Baptist Bible College in Dunbar, Wisconsin, Dr. Les Olala. He delivered this sermon at a Bible conference service on Tuesday afternoon, March 21, 1995. His text is taken from the book of 1 Kings, chapters 1 and 2, as well as Psalm 17, verse 15. His message is a humbling challenge titled, The Six Faces in David's Death.
Let's turn to 1 Kings, chapter 1. If you had 1 week to live, who would you call by your side? Who comes to mind first as someone who would be by your side before you were ushered into God's presence? I'm going to preach this afternoon on the six faces in David's death. We'll pick up the story in chapter 1 of 1 Kings and verse 1. Now King David was old and stricken in years. They covered him with clothes, but he got no heat. Wherefore his servant said unto him, Let there be sought for my lord the king a young virgin. Let her stand before the king. Let her cherish him. Let her lie in thy bosom, that my lord the king may get heat. So they sought for a fair damsel throughout all the coast of Israel, found Abishag, a Shunammite, and brought her unto the king. The damsel was very fair and cherished the king and ministered to him, but the king knew her not. This was not an improper thing to do. David was aging, was about to be ushered into the presence of God, was in his last days. People were brought in to minister to him. But he came down to the closing moments of his life. They were just simply trying to keep him warm. He had some thoughts to share before he died. But who did he call to his bedside? What faces did David see in his death? Well, there are many exciting stories if we followed the life of David from his childhood on to this time in life. But now the warrior is going home. He walked through history with victories and defeats. Now he was the closing moments of life. Let's look over in verse 28 of chapter 1. Who did David call? Verse 28, then King David answered and said, Call me Bathsheba. And she came into the king's presence and stood before the king. The first one he called to him was his wife. As Bathsheba came in and he saw the face of Bathsheba, many memories must have flooded the mind of David. The memories that reminded him that sin alters a life, and that sin alters a relationship to God. We're familiar with the story of Bathsheba. We are familiar with the circumstances that surrounded that. We're familiar with David's cry of repentance, pouring out his heart unto God. But what did he see in the face of Bathsheba? Those reminders. Oh, of a great relationship they had together, but also a sin-altered life. That wrong choice in an unguarded moment. Let's turn back to Psalm 51 and let's see some of the words that David used to describe what came out of this relationship. Psalm 32 and Psalm 51 are chapters that indicate the heart of brokenness of King David. Psalm 32, David said, "Blessed is the man whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered." He said, "It's a happy man who has sinned in his past." And in Psalm 51, we see the cry of David, "Have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, according to the multitude of thy tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from mine iniquity. Cleanse me from my sin. For I acknowledge my transgression. My sin is ever before me against thee. Thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight, that thou mightest be justified when thou speakest and be clear when thou judgest." How did David describe these actions? The first word he used was transgression. Four words were used to express the guilt. Transgression means to rebel against God, to grow contrary to the law of God. Willful sin. And David said, "I acknowledge my willful sin, my willful choosing to go contrary to God's law." Next word he uses is the word iniquity. Iniquity, the word avon, means moral depravity, perversity. That which is unhideable. Reference to bird feathers. A covering. And he said, "God, I acknowledge my transgressions. I acknowledge my iniquity." And then he uses the word sin. "My sin is ever before me." The word sin means to miss the mark. Having a certain destination and I miss that mark. I sin. I don't go God's way. Back when Bo Ryan was coaching North Carolina State, he was going to interview for a job at LSU in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Some of you may remember Bo Ryan. Flew his own plane, went to Shreveport. On his way back, he set his automatic pilot, got into a storm, became disoriented, ran into an oxygen problem. He became unconscious at the controls. Plane went from Baton Rouge, it crossed South Carolina, came up into North Carolina, went out over the ocean. Radar picked us up, two military jets scrambled and picked up, and they found this pilot slumped over the controls. Not a thing they could do, and the plane went until it crashed. Bo's body was not found. He had a destination. Fell asleep at the controls, flying full speed the wrong direction. That's what a person is who is living in sin. Going throttle wide open in the wrong direction, missing the mark completely, even though you may appear to be a success in life. Then he used the word evil. Verse 4, "Against thee, thee only have I sinned and done this evil." It's the word ra, meaning the word treason. David said, "I was a traitor." Boy, that had to tear David up more than anything else. The fact that he was a traitor to Jehovah God. Doesn't it grieve your heart when you know you have grieved the heart of God? And you know through disobedience you have treason within you. And you violated the allegiance. And you develop a dual loyalty. David is saying, "God, blot out my transgressions. Blot out my iniquity. My sin is ever before me. Before thee have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight." Bathsheba's face, I'm sure, must have brought back memories of a sin-altered life. And secondly, that sin altered the relationship to God. God is holy. God loves us with a perfect love. But God is holy, and God will not tolerate our disobedience. You might say, if only I had guarded, if only I had guarded my life. As you come down to the end of your life, I hope you are making decisions right now as a high school student, as a college student, that when it comes down to the last week of your life and you call people to your bedside, as you look into the face, you don't have a Psalm 51. Or you don't have a Psalm 32 to recall. Who else did he call into his presence? Let's go back to 1 Kings. Not only did he call his wife, let's look in verse 31 of 1 Kings chapter 1. Then Bathsheba bowed her face to the earth and did reverence to the king and said, "Let my lord King David live forever." She departs, verse 32, and King David said, "Call me Zadok, the priest." So next he calls his spiritual counselor, his priest, his pastor, the one who stayed loyal to him, the one who did not go after Absalom when Absalom was in a revolt against his father to take the throne of Israel. Zadok remained faithful to King David. Just jot down the reference of 2 Samuel chapter 15. You'll see the story of Absalom trying to overthrow his father's throne, appealing to Zadok. But Zadok goes with the king. As you get on in life, you are going to love to be able to look back and say, there is a spiritual advisor who walked with me, who stood with me, who helped me. You academy student, and maybe a dean of students, maybe a pastor, it may be your home youth pastor, but it will be someone who stood with you through thick and through thin. Those of you who are going on in pastoral ministry, you're going to have to stand sometimes at your own expense to see life produced in somebody else. Keep your finger there in 1 Kings chapter 1 and turn quickly to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Very convicting passage to me as a leader. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. We will read verse 14 and 15. Here's the true heart of a pastor. The true heart of a spiritual leader. A true Zadok. Paul says in verse 14, "Behold, a third time I am ready to come to you and will not be burdensome to you, for I seek not yours but you." Underscore that if you're going into pastoral ministry. I don't seek your things. I am seeking you. Paul said, "I am going to come." And he was having to rebuke the Corinthian church. He said, "I'm not seeking things from you. I am seeking you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children." And look in verse 15. This is what convicts me. "And I will very gladly spend and be spent for you. Though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved." Paul says, "I will gladly, very gladly spend. I'll give you my possessions and be spent. I'll give you my person. Knowing full well, the more I love you, the less I am going to be loved in return." And he said, "I will do it gladly." Message on praise and rejoicing we heard this morning is a great thing to carry with you. I was talking with Mrs. Edwards. She said, "Boy, if you couldn't come out of that praise in the Lord, something is wrong." You say, "Well, I'm tired of giving and nobody returns the love." Get used to it. Paul says, "I'll gladly do it." I think Paul said that probably because he had already died. He said, "I die daily. Dead men don't have feelings." That's what's so convicting. Will you be a Zadok to somebody? Will you be one who will stand by people? Will you be one who will take someone who needs nurturing as a Barnabas took the Apostle Paul in those early days and nurtured him to maturity? I remember a teenager named Steve Laha. Steve Lahoff is now a missionary out under Gospel Fellowship. Steve Lahoff was a campus hippie, Brave Lake High School. He had peace buttons in those late 60s, early 70s. He was the leader of the campus rebel movement. If you know Steve Lahoff now, you think I'm lying. He has become so meek, you have to fire him up to get him excited about anything. He came in to argue with me. He said, those young people from Calvary Baptist have no business coming on this high school campus and telling anybody about their religion and handing out this literature. I had never met Steve before. I said, Steve, I'm not going to argue with you. I just want to know if you're man enough to read the Bible. Will you meet me every Tuesday at 5 o'clock? And we'll meet from 5 to 6 and I'll give you a Bible passage and I want to see if you're man enough to handle that. Then I'll talk with you. And Steve took up the challenge. Amazingly. Within a few weeks, Steve began coming to church and Steve came and got saved. Boy, I mean, he got saved. Came down here to Bob Jones and got all of his graduate, undergraduate and graduate work and has been in the Philippines now for second or third term. You know what you feel like as a leader sometimes doing with some smart mouth who comes into your office? Sit down, pal. You go and load your gospel gun, but maybe not necessarily always so spirit-filled. You know, there are some people that you're just going to have to love. I know 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, Paul says, love pulls rank over speech, over study, over sacrifice. He said, though I give my body to be burned, that is the Greek, that means God may call you to work with junior high students. And that is applicable there. And you think, boy, some of these kids I don't think will ever change. But you have to determine you're going to be a spiritual influence. Well, back to Zadok. David called Zadok by his side. And David looked into the face of loyalty and conviction. There was a man who was loyal and there was a man who had convictions. And he brought him into his room and he said, I knew through life, Zadok, I could look to you. And I know you would say to me, David, you can count on me. As you review life as you get older, there are not going to be very many people you can look back and say, that is indeed a Zadok to me. His spiritual advisor. Thirdly, verse 32 of 1 Kings chapter 1. And David said, call me Zadok the priest and Nathan. Thirdly, Nathan is called to his side. In the face of Nathan, David recalled mercy. You remember in 2 Samuel chapter 12. In fact, let's turn back to 2 Samuel 12 and look at the story. Nathan had the horrible assignment of going to David. I'm sure this must have ripped at the heart of Nathan, I have to go to the king with this message. 2 Samuel chapter 12 and verse 1. And the Lord sent Nathan unto David. And he came unto him and said unto him, there were two men in one city, the one rich and the other poor. The rich man had exceeding many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing save one little ewe lamb, which he bought and nourished up. And it grew up together with him, with his children. It did eat of his own meat and drank of his own cup and lay in his bosom and was unto him as a daughter. There came a traveler unto the rich man and he spared to take his own flock and of his own herd to dress for the wayfaring man that was come to him, but took the poor man's lamb, dressed it for the man that was come to him. And David's anger was greatly kindled against the man. He said to Nathan, as the Lord liveth, the man that hath done this thing shall surely die. And he shall restore the lamb fourfold because he did this thing. And because he had no pity. Here was the tough thing. Here was the hard thing in verse 7. And Nathan said to David, "Thou art the man." David, I am talking about you. Fourfold, David said, he shall restore fourfold. And David indeed reaped that. The baby died. Ammon raped his half-sister. Absalom murdered Amnon and became disloyal. Adonijah betrayed David while he was on his deathbed. Horrible. Horrible reaping from David passing his own sentence. But Nathan was the one who had to deliver that message. Nathan was not elevated above him. He did not sit in condemnation. He only reported the message that God had to give to a disobedient man of God. Verse 7, "Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I anointed thee king over Israel, and I delivered thee out of the hand of Saul. Gave thee thy master's house and thy master's wives unto thy bosom, and gave the house of Israel and of Judah. And if that had been too little, I would moreover have given unto thee such as such and such things." Verse 10, "Now the sword shall never depart from thy house, because thou hast despised me, and hast taken the wife of Uriah, the Hittite, to thy wife." Verse 13, "David said unto Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. And Nathan said unto David, the Lord also hath put thy sin away. Thou shalt not die. Howbeit, because by this deed thou hast given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme, the child also that is born unto thee shall die." Nathan departed unto his house. Well, what a tough assignment. But in Nathan, the face of Nathan, David saw mercy. Scars will outlast the pleasures of sin. But thank God, God is a God of mercy. God is a God of forgiveness. And David cried in Psalm 51, "Restore unto me the joy of thy salvation. Renew within me a right spirit. Then shall I teach transgressors thy way, and sinners shall be converted unto thee." Oh, what he saw in the face of Nathan. How are we in our relationship with God? Why did David drift and have to come into that rebuke by Nathan? Because of misdirected love. 2 Timothy chapter 3 says, "In the last days perilous times shall come, men shall be lovers of their own selves." Root word there is phileo, philautos, self-love. That's one reason why we are turned away from God, because we are commanded to love Him with our whole heart and we are directing that love to us. Then the next word is covetous. Interestingly enough, the root of that is also phileo. Philarguos, which means loving things. Not only lovers of self, but lovers of possessions. Boy, what a plague that is in our society today. I went to preach at a Christian school. Pulled in the parking lot, the student parking lot. And there were automobiles parked in that student parking lot that if I lived four lifetimes, I could never earn enough money to buy. Now, the faculty parking lot was something else, but that student parking lot. I thought, loving things. And then it says, lovers of pleasure, from which we get the word hedonism, phileo, root, hedone, lovers of pleasure. You see, what turns a heart to that which is wrong when we drift from our love that we are commanded to have? Revelation chapter 2, the Ephesian church, God was grading them. Deeds were A+. Durability, A+. Doctrine, A+. Discipline, they wouldn't tolerate evil, A+. Devotion, F. You have left your first love. You see, the step to get to where David was when Nathan had to come to rebuke him started with the departure from absolute love directed to God and dividing that love to self, to things, to pleasure. Ask yourself, say, oh God, am I in that situation? God, am I in a situation where I am violating a great commandment in all the Bible to love God with all of my heart? And then, verse 36 of 1 Kings chapter 1, Bathsheba exited. Zadok now gone. Nathan now departed. And in verse 36, and Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, answered the king and said, Amen. The Lord God of my, or God of my Lord, the king, say so too. As the Lord has been with my Lord the king, even so he be with Solomon. Who is in here next? Benaiah. Now who is Benaiah? In the face of Benaiah, David saw courage. He saw a man who battled with him. Not his spiritual counselor, not his priest, not his wife, not his prophet, but a fellow warrior. I love reading about the mighty men of David. I get so tickled when I study Shimei. In fact, if you ever want a case study in bitterness, study the person of Shimei throughout the Bible. Shimei is the prime case study in bitterness. Shimei comes out cursing King David and casting stones, major violation of the law. But he does it in the presence of David's mighty men. He does it in the presence of Abishai. This is not in this chapter. I'm just making allusion to a 2 Samuel 16 passage. And Abishai said, David, let me go take the dead dog's head off. You're going to let Shimei curse you like that? And here's Abishai feathering his sword and saying, David, let me handle this. David said, no, let him go. God's going to take care of this. Who was Abishai? One of David's mighty men. Was he able to handle Shimei? On the way home from fighting one day, he killed 300 men. He just wiped out Philistines for aerobics. So he is going to be worried about Abishai or Shimei? But then Benaiah. Let's look in 1 Chronicles chapter 11 and verse 22. We will be shortly closing. 1 Chronicles chapter 11, verse 22. Interesting that Benaiah would be at David's bedside. Bathsheba's face, there was guilt. Zadok's face, conviction and loyalty. Nathan, mercy, forgiveness. Benaiah, courage. Verse 22 of 1 Chronicles 11. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man, Kabzeel, who had done many acts. He slew two lion-like men of Moab, also went down and slew a lion in a pit in a snowy day. It also make reference back to 2 Samuel 23, but for the sake of time, don't do it now, except you'll find him in the listings of David's mighty men. Men who never turned back from the battle. I can see the embrace when Benaiah came into that room and David, now that great warrior, that great God-placed king. I can see David attempting to reach up to hug Benaiah and Benaiah going to David. And I can hear David saying, thanks, pal. We had many, many good times together, many battles. We wondered if we'd ever come out alive. But God was good. And Benaiah, thanks for not turning back in the heat of battle. Well, as we get on in life, every week it seems like someone else is peeling out of the battle, dropping out of the conflict. Oh, what a blessing to be able to have an embrace with someone who was a fellow soldier and had the courage to stand and fight. And say, I am going home. But I fought faithfully to the end. We're in a battle of spiritual warfare. Face of courage. Storms come up in life sometimes. The interesting thought in the book of Acts. It says, and the salt winds blew softly in Acts 27. Little did they realize the tremendous storm that was going to come along the horizon. And in the storm, you have a tendency to feel depressed. You have a tendency to fear. Tendency to flee. But you really need to face it. And when you have someone else who will stand in the storm with you and will face the storm with you, that makes it so much easier. Many of you are familiar with the Willis family up in Chicago, Illinois. Pastor Willis was going along. The church was being used for a voting station on election day. He loaded his family in the van. Him and his wife and six children. They were going up to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and struck a part of a semi-truck mud flap. The mud flap kicked up. That iron piece came, punctured the fuel tank, dragged on the road, caused sparks, blew that van up while it was en route. Six children just snuffed out. Dr. Jones Jr. was up at Heart Conference when Mr. and Mrs. Willis, just now recovering from their own burns, gave testimony of the goodness and the grace of God. Storms. But just a few weeks later, a youth group in Illinois going home late one Friday night, a van out of control, and the pastor's three sons were killed. The first family there, the Willis family, to hold and to encourage and to stand. See, I've been through that same fight. Right now, as a college student, you may be ideal. You may think you'll never face major storms in life. Everything may be well. The health may be there. Your family may be all together. You've never known tragedy of any type. But suddenly things can change. Who will be with you? You're going to find then who friends are. Boy, some years back when I went through some heart-rending situations, one of the first telephone calls I got was from a Benaiah of mine, Dr. Bob Jones III. That's a Benaiah to me. Oh, the battles are great. We fought some battles together, shoulder to shoulder. We fought the same battles sometimes from aloof. But what a joy to look back and say, there's a man of courage. Appreciate the friendships you form in college. The best friends we have in life. I see all this is sitting out here. Best friends in life. Those we met here in college. But then, I must close. Chapter 2 of 1 Kings and verse 1. A tender moment was coming. Bathsheba gone. Nathan exited the room. Zadok now gone. Benaiah backs out. David was now nigh unto death. A tender moment. The scene was set. Verse 1. Now the days of David drew nigh that he should die, and he charged Solomon, his son. Not his wife. Not his prophet. Not his priest. Not his fellow warrior. Now he called Solomon in. Said, Solomon, you are my only hope. Amnon raped his half-sister and he's shot. Absalom betrayed me and he's gone. Adonijah deceived me, trying to overthrow me on my deathbed. Shammua, Ithrian, probably died in battle. Shobab, not known what happened with him. And of the seven boys, Solomon, you're left. Solomon, you are it. David's heart was heavy. He knew he was about to go into the presence of God, and he knew he was going to have to tell Solomon the load of responsibility that he was taking on. He says in verse 2, I go the way of all the earth. Be thou strong, therefore, and show thyself a man. Lord, if I could get every preacher boy and every man, whatever your major would be, in the academy or in this college, and if every man would take that challenge, be strong and show thyself a man, and keep the charge of the Lord thy God, to walk in His ways, to keep His statutes and His commandments and His judgments and His testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that thou mayest prosper in all that thou doest, whithersoever thou turnest thyself. That the Lord may continue His word, which He spake concerning me, saying, if thy children take heed to their way to walk before me in truth with all their heart, with all their soul, there shall not fail thee, said he, a man on the throne of Israel. Solomon, it's on you. We who are getting on in life, look to you young people, guys and gals. It's on you. We have to call you to the bedside. You Bob Jones students, parents, visiting pastors, the task is ours. The job is ours. The Great Commission still is true. Solomon received great instruction from David. David felt now he was ready. Five faces I mentioned, but my sermon title was six faces in David's death. Let's turn to Psalm chapter 17 and verse 15. Psalm chapter 17 and verse 15. David said in his prayer, as for me, I will behold thy face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake with thy likeness. The last face in David's death was the face of Jehovah God, his Redeemer. The song says it will be worth it all when we see Christ. Life's trials will seem so small when we see Him. One glimpse of His dear face, all sorrow will erase. So bravely run the race till we see Christ. Oft times the way seems long and trials hard to bear, tempted to complain, to murmur and despair. Christ will soon appear to catch His bride away. All tears forever over in God's eternal day. It will be worth it all. Should be an encouragement to us to realize the best the unsaved will ever know is right now. This is the worst we will ever know as Christians. The best is yet to come. May we hear, well done, good and faithful servant. May we be able to say with the Apostle Paul, I have fought a good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith when we see the face of God. If we had 1 week to live, who would we call by the bedside? Who would be the one that you would want to see? What would those faces bring back to your memory? May it all be blessed.
Thank you for joining us for the Chapel Platform. If you'd like a copy of today's message, send us a check for $6.50. You can mail that check to Campus Store, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, 29614. Please mention the speaker, Dr. Les Olala, whose name is spelled O-L-L-I-L-A. Also mention the title of the message, The Six Faces in David's Death, and today's date. Join us again for the Chapel Platform, sponsored by Bob Jones University.